Hello and welcome to the Wild in Richmond podcast. My name is Kyle Banton-Jones and I'll be your host. The Wild in Richmond podcast is a show about animal welfare, training, enrichment, and everything in between. Each episode, we will be exploring concepts surrounding behavioral husbandry and the ever-advancing field of animal welfare, from interviews with real animal care professionals to educational episodes about new concepts in animal care. This is the Wild in Richmond podcast. Enjoy. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Wild in Richmond podcast. Today, we are joined by special guest Dr. Esther Matrai, who is the Senior Research Fellow at Ocean Park Corporation in Hong Kong, and she does a ton of fantastic research, which I was really happy to get into it with her during this conversation. We spent a lot of time on, in particular, cognitive and cooperative-based enrichment for dolphins. You know, we expanded that to other species as well, and, you know, we went into how to evaluate cognitive enrichment, how to create reliable cognitive enrichment that's going to be enriching over the long term. We got into a lot of really, really interesting stuff, and I think it was a great conversation. So with that, please enjoy this wide-ranging conversation with myself and Dr. Esther Matrai. Hello, Esther, and welcome to the Wild in Richmond podcast. We are very, very excited to speak with you today.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, so not only are you probably the farthest person, you're stationed in Hong Kong right now, which is pretty much the farthest person that I've interviewed. So you definitely have the top spot for farthest time difference between guests. So also you have some of the most interesting research of anybody we have ever had on the show. So thank you very, very much for coming on. We're very excited to speak with about some of that research today.
Wow, what a lovely introduction. Thank you so much.
Yeah, so that research, particularly what we're going to get into today is, you know, cognitive enrichment. You've done a lot of amazing research on that, as well as some cooperative enrichment, which is equally fascinating. You have a really, really interesting lab out of Ocean Park in Hong Kong. That is super interesting. Very excited to talk about it. Do you want to sort of give people an idea of, you know, your background and sort of how you got involved in the field of animal welfare and how you got around to starting to research all these fantastic enrichment devices?
Sure. So I'm graduated as a zoologist with a master's degree, and then I have a PhD in ethology. So it has been a long journey for me to arrive to Hong Kong, where I have been working since 2010. I was studying something very different back at the university, but through changing fields and traveling from country to country, I arrived to Hong Kong, where I first joined Ocean Park as a research intern. And after the internship, I was offered a position as a research assistant. And since then, I have been working in the park, first supporting other projects, and then finally we started developing our own project, which is a cognitive enrichment project with our dolphins. And in the last couple of years, the lab has grown and finally started working not only with dolphins, but extending that work to as many animals as possible within Ocean Park. And that's the big plan, that one day we will have an opportunity to provide either enrichment studies or other research studies that are associated with the various animal exhibits within Ocean Park.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And yeah, I will link your website and all the papers that we talk about in the show notes for people to check out, because there's some really cool diagrams of some of the enrichment that we're going to be speaking about, as well as sort of more in-depth methods and all that, which is really, really interesting. I'd highly recommend people check it out. But Do we sort of want to start? I know a lot of the recent research is around dolphins. As you mentioned, you have some really cool research around seals and iguanas, giant panda, Arctic fox, red panda. There's all sorts of interesting stuff happening on your website. So do you want to talk a little bit about some of your recent research or some other research that you feel like people would be interested in?
Sure. But just a little bit back on your previous comment. So if anyone in the audience has an interest in any of the research devices, please reach out. I'm very happy to help if you have any questions or if you plan on building a similar device and you need help implementing it into your facilities. We are very happy to help for anyone who is interested. So the other ultimate plan besides trying to make all the animals life better in our park, that using what we have achieved or learned with our animals in ocean park to be able to share it with anyone in the scientific community, in the zoological community, or just anyone who is interested, and be able to apply all that with their animals at their facilities or in their homes. So yeah, and on our current study, so as I mentioned, we started up with the cognitive enrichments with our dolphins, which basically devices that are made of very simple material, PVC pipes, caps, and rope handles, and they allow our dolphins to work together by pulling the handle simultaneously and opening the devices. We fill the devices with ice and a couple of pieces of fish, and we give it to the animals. So they have completely free time to interact with these devices. They do whatever they want to do. They manipulate the devices the way they want. We do not provide any training for them. And what's more important, that we do feed the animals before these sessions. So they are not interacting with the devices because they are hungry, but because they show an interest in it. And so we started these studies in 2016. And the original of this study goes back to Dr. Stan Kuchai, who designed the very first cooperative enrichment, which was one pipe, two caps, and two handles. So that allowed the dolphins, pairs of dolphins, to cooperate. And we implemented these devices with a cooperative research with Stan Kuchai. And our dolphins started utilizing these devices, and they not even succeeded in opening the devices and taking out the content of it, but they also invented a new behavior. So you can imagine that dolphins in the wild and in any habitat, if you see them, you usually see them swimming in synchrony. That's a very, very natural behavior. It's part of the behavior repertoire, and they signal affiliative behavior. So what we started to see that after the dolphins emptied the device, but sometimes even without opening these devices, they held the device and they started swimming in synchrony. It's a very slow moving activity, and they complete the same kind of circle. So they pick up the device, they head to the surface, they breathe in synchrony, they let the device go, and they sink down and pick up the devices again. So when we first started seeing these behaviors, we were amazed because that was something that we had never seen with the regular enrichment items. They do have access to enrichment items. Enrichment items are basically called toys or clever toys that they just provide an opportunity for the dolphins to interact with their environment. So when we designed these cooperative enrichment devices, we wanted to see whether they can open it and get the food out of it. But they were not only successful of doing this, but they engaged with the device throughout the entire research session, which lasted about 15 minutes. So we had sessions when the dolphins held the device and swim with it in synchrony for nearly 15 minutes nonstop, which is something that we never experienced before. And it was a signal for a friendly, affiliative behavior and a positive state of mind. So then we asked the question, because we had dolphins who would follow the ones that held the device, what if we give them more handles? What if we allow more than two animals to get involved? And that's when we started getting a little crazy and building all these devices with T-shaped three handle, and then another device which has a T-shaped four handles, and besides that, now we have reached to, I think, up to 7 devices with multiple handles arranged in all kinds of different crazy construction. And our dolphins keep interacting with these devices and loving to swim with it. So that was something which we experienced first with our dolphins. And that's when the question in my institution came, okay, this one worked really well for the dolphins. Can we grow on this project and can we involve more of the species within the park? And afterwards, the question was also not just to build enrichment items, but how we can utilize the research methodology, the way that we collect data, how we observe the animals to help the animals within the park, not only for looking at enrichment devices, but also, for example, looking at a new veterinary procedure. So as Kai listed many of the species that we are working with, many of these studies actually were initiated by our veterinarians. So they knew that they wanted to try a new potentially never used procedure such as acupuncture on animals that never received acupuncture and to see whether that can help with, let's say, joint-related pain or any medical problems for animals. And they wanted to have a feedback on in terms of behavioral response to these new treatments. So we designed an observation protocol which allowed us to collect the baseline data and then another data set during these procedures. So we could try to compare these data sets to see if there is any measurable difference in the animal behavior, such as growing activity, which we would expect if the pain is reduced and mobility is increased. So as we started designing these new studies, more and more questions came up and more of the colleagues within the park realized that what we are doing is actually rather than giving them extra jobs and extra things to do with their animals, it's rather than we are trying to help and solve some of the potential behavioral issues, medical problems, or anything that we can do from our scientific point of view to help and contribute to the care of these animals on a daily or weekly or even lifelong basis.
Yeah, wow. It's really, really interesting, some of those studies that you've been doing, and it's great to hear how it's been translated to like the animal care staff as well and the veterinary staff, because that's a very hard bridge to cross a lot of the time. Is it's very easy, you know, as an animal welfare professional to design studies and observation methods and these sort of systems that don't really work for keepers. Like they work for you in a lab and for, you know, a graduate student that's able to sit and watch the dolphins for 8 hours a day. But actually designing systems that work for animal care staff is huge. So it's, yeah, really interesting to hear about that and something that we'll probably touch on a little bit later. Some follow-up questions around some of the research that you were mentioning. Why did you sort of land on dolphins for these cooperative studies? Was there enough research to sort of inform that decision, or was there a specific like sort of question that you had coming into it?
Okay, so this is a question with kind of a complex answer. So why dolphins on the first time? So when I joined Ocean Park as a research intern, there was only one study going on in Ocean Park that was led by another university, not piloted by Ocean Park, and that was a dolphin study. So I joined the research working with dolphins from day number one when I joined the park. So when it came to the time that I was to design new experiments, then naturally it was the same study animal, given that I had the history, the background, and also the history not only with the animals, but also with the care team who work with these animals. So in this discussion, we are talking about enrichment and cognitive enrichment. But prior to that, I have done quite a few cognitive studies. Some of these are still ongoing. Then it was very heavy on the animal training part because we were asking complex questions such as trait recognition, or trying to learn more about how animals use echolocation. So I had to become a trainer, and that was part of my job. So I have this long working relationship with human and non-human colleagues within Ocean Park who has known me and worked with me for over the years, 6-7 years before the cooperative enrichment study started up. And the reason for why studying cooperation. So when I was tasked with developing new projects for Ocean Park, there was not much on the guidance regarding the direction we should be moving on. But my director at that time, Suzanne Gendron, who had the faith in me to come up with some cool ideas, what is it that we can study with animals and that could actually help in conservation matters, exit to conservation. So we know that dolphins cooperate in the wild in multiple reasons, such as finding food, having access to mates, looking after the young ones. So cooperation per se is a very essential part of their social lives and make one group more successful than another. But when you look at the literature in terms of cooperation, only even if you just focus on bottlenose dolphins, you don't even have to, you know, look at cetaceans in general, you will find a huge variety of behaviors when dolphins cooperate. And the mechanism of these behaviors is sometimes somewhat known, but mostly not really known. When I say mechanism, we don't know how many players do we need for that team, who makes it to being a good player, or how are these players actually selected, or why do these players being selected over and over from one year to another. So my question would be is not to ask whether dolphins can cooperate. We know they can cooperate. The ultimate question, how do they cooperate, and what makes one team more successful than another team? So, in the wild, we know that male dolphins are potentially more evolved towards cooperation, or they are more likely to cooperate because they have to get the wingman, the wing dolphin, to get the female. So, if you look at Dr. Connor's work in Shanghai, Australia, you can see these amazing studies that they have seen that they have a multi-level alliance formation between male dolphins, and some of the very strong alliances between these animals can last for decades or even longer than that. And so when we designed the studies for cooperation, we wanted to see what factors may influence cooperation or have an impact on cooperative activities. So we tried to test and give these enrichment items to all of our dolphins in the park. So involve everyone in different group settings. And because the dolphins like these enrichment items, even after now 7 years and several hundreds of sessions, no matter when I put the enrichment in the pool, they just really interested in interacting with it. So we got into the habit of building in this cooperative enrichment device into the weekly schedule for animals. And it's going to be hopefully something that we do for the rest of their life, because with that, we can track what happens when the individuals are growing older, what happens when one individual goes from one group to another, what happens when we lose an individual, or what happens when a new individual comes into the group, how does this change the social network? Or going back a little bit, looking at very clear demographic factors such as sex, or relatedness, or age, because all of these factors we know about our animal. There is a few projects in wild dolphin population where the animals are very well known to the researchers, and they follow them over the years. So they know all these factors, but many times that's not always the case. So with our animals in the park, we can try to look at these questions a little bit more in a strategic manner. And also because we are tasked to look after these animals for the rest of their life, we can try to see if there are any tendencies that we can see in the long run. And again, just come up with cooler and cooler devices to answer more of these questions.
Yeah, that's amazing. How did you sort of go about inventing this cooperative in Richmond that you have that we'll link in the study, the PVC one is the one that I've seen pictures of. It's I love it because it looks relatively approachable for people to design their own. But I'd love to hear about how you sort of went about coming up with that idea. Was that like, was there previous designs about that, or did you try a bunch of different things, or what did that process look like?
So the first device, the 2x device that was designed by Dr. Kuchai, they actually published the results in 2015, and they have the device in the journal that you can look up. Everyone can see what's made of and what are the dimensions. So that we just simply copied, and Dr. Kuchai did not recommend any changes to the device at that time. So basically we just went ahead with that. But we used the devices in a little bit in a different way. So we not only used a single device, but with our dolphins, we also had a setting where we provided 2 devices to see if there are different groups within the group. And after that, we basically just used very similar material. So the PVC pipe and the fittings are something that anyone can buy in a hardware store. It's very easily available. It's meant for using for water pipes, so anyone can buy it. You can chop it to the size that you need, and you can just simply sand it with a sandpaper to make sure that there are no sharp edges. The rope we usually buy from sailing shops because they have the kind of soft but not too soft rope, and with the kind of thread that makes it okay for the dolphin's teeth to bite on, because that's something most people in the zoological society might have a concern with, is what the animals are biting on, because their teeth might be damaged. So we have to buy materials that we know it's safe for the animal use. And of course, all of these devices need to be approved by the park's Animal Welfare and Ethics Committee to make sure that they are safe for the animals. But before that, we usually do our own tests, which means that me and my colleague would go into the water with the device, and even though we are very puny dolphins, we try our best to destroy it as much as we can, and even invite some colleagues to join in and give it a try and make sure that nothing can be fallen apart, nothing can be damaged. But when they have access to these devices, of course, we are always at the pool site. So in case of any emergencies, we would be able to provide a callback. But yes, as you mentioned, these PVC pipes are amazing because they are so inexpensive. It's really available anywhere, and it's such an easy material to work with. We do not glue the PVC pipes together. So if you look at the pictures in the publication, with the device that has multiple handles, meaning it has 3 or even more handles, we only have one of the caps removable. But we don't want the dolphins to learn which one it is. So we have to balance it over the trout. That means we're using 5 to 7 centimeter wide 3M brand wide electrical tape, and we basically tape all these joints and all the caps on the device, and then we get a cutter and we just cut the tape over the handle that would be the one where the dolphins can open, so they never really know which one it is. But you know, they have echolocation, so they can basically see where the fish is, although the fish and the eyes can move around the device. So that's the bigger the device is, it's harder to take out the fish and the eyes. But to be completely frank, I believe the fish and the eyes is secondary to our animals. Having access to the handles and being the one swimming with the device seems to be more important for them. We have these amazing videos of the animals picking up the device, the opening it super happily. You would hear lots of whistles, lots of voices, lots of clicks underwater, and then they happily swimming in front of the camera. The fish is all coming out, and no one cares about it. They happily swimming away with the device. The fish was there at the beginning to give sort of a reason for them to open the device. But since then, and I don't want to spoil this, we have designed a couple of new enrichments that does not involve any fish or ice. Mm. I have been presenting these findings over conferences and trying to convince other facilities that this is something they should consider to introduce to their animals. And one of the questions I usually get, would my animals show any aggression? Would they compete for the device? Would they potentially would this device potentially trigger some sort of negative social interactions? And of course, I can only see it for my animals in the park, because I've only been working with one group of animals, which is also the limitation of our study. So all these cool things I have written about are all about the same animals. So that's another thing. We know what we can, our animals can do, but we don't know whether animals would react the same way. In fact, there has been two other studies. One is the first study by Dr. Kuchar, where they had a mixed group of dolphins where there were two male dolphins monopolized the device and the rest of the group didn't even get a say in it. And there was another facility where the two-way device was used, but their animals did not cooperate. Mm. So if anyone wants to jump into the study, let me know, because it would be amazing to see how other animals are responding. And for those of you who are thinking that these devices might trigger any of these negative impacts, I can only encourage you that I don't think it would. The reason for that, because our animals, the first group of animals we started up with, it's a male group. Mm. And we did have some aggressive behavior happening before. And I have to clarify this. Aggressive interactions in dolphin societies are part of the natural behavior repertoire.
Yeah.
It's not something that's an indicator, but they happen. However, you do not want to encourage these behaviors. So as a welfare scientist, one of the approach that you do, you give something else for the animals to do. So if they have to decide about chasing another dolphin, or rather they're interacting with something that they are excited about, then be hoping that the second would be more attractive for them rather than trying to chase the first dolphin in question. So one of the reasons I started up with cooperation was, going back to the original question, because the care team members were saying, oh, Axel, could we do something where these animals could be behaving in a more friendly manner outside of the training sessions, outside of the interactive time when the trainers are interacting with the animals, so sometimes during the free time. So, and that's when the light bulb came up. I was like, yes, I know about this study. And I had a very fortunate time in 2016. December 2016, I was presenting at the Society of Marine Mammalogy Conference, where Dr. Kuchar was also there. So I had an opportunity to talk with him firsthand, and sadly, he is not with us anymore. But that was a very amazing time for us to make friends and decide to try to work together. He was excited about having another group of dolphins testing with his original design. And then we basically built on that. So going back to the previous point, handling potential chasing or potential competitive behavior at most, we try to minimize the opportunity for that. So we do completely feed the animals. We just finished a normal training session. And that's when they usually would receive their regular enrichment items between the sessions. But instead of the regular enrichment items, we give them our enrichment items. And so it does. They do not expect any more feeding. They do not expect any more interactions. We made it very clear that there is no correct behavior. So we basically don't respond to whatever they do during the session time. Even at the end, if they bring the device to us, we would not reinforce that. If they leave the device on the bottom of the pool, I would just jump in and grab it myself. Mm. So we do not ask them to collect the device. So they don't have any kind of positive or rewarded association with the device and with the trainer, with each other, or probably yes, otherwise they would not engage in the behavior over and over, but not towards us. We also ask the trainer to help hold the animals at the opposite end of the pool, so everyone is quite equal distance from the device, so it's as fair as possible. And if it's a bigger dolphin group, we would give them multiple devices simultaneously, so to reduce the opportunity for someone chasing the other animal and not having access to any of the handles. And if any of your guests who's listening to this podcast are interested in taking the fish out, also possible. You can try to run this experiment only using some of the maybe jello or just ice cube, or put something else in the device. You can even put another enrichment inside if you think that's safe. So I do believe that the device can be adapted to different facilities. So if anyone would like to try and anyone has a question, then ask, because I would be super happy to try to help. But in general, I think it's safe to say after 7 years and hundreds of sessions without any aggression, without any negative interactions, that the devices are something that somehow the animals really like.
Yeah, no, that's so interesting. Now that the device has been sort of in the rotation of their enrichment and like these individual dolphins have been exposed to it quite a bit, have you had to sort of adjust it to keep it novel, or is the behavior of like cooperating with other dolphins the enrichment itself, and like that's sort of you know, keeping them interacting with it?
So we have a set number of sessions that we conduct with each device, and at the moment we have, let me quickly count, 1, 2, 3, 4, 7 different devices. So when a dolphin team or dolphin group is together, we would run the session of the first device, and then when it's completed, the second one, then it's completed at the third one, fourth, and so on, until we either reach the end or until they switch the group around. So our dolphin social groups are being changed time to time due to the management plan of our facility, due to some of the younger dolphins that are growing up and moving from one group to another. And when this happens, we basically just go back to the first step and then start running the experiment from the very first stage. Sometimes when the animals are separated from the team, let's say you have two animals, they are separated due to some medical conditions for a temporary shorter period of time, we still run those sessions. And even if I know that we won't be able to collect the set amount of data that I can use for statistical analysis, I still run the session, because as long as the animals show some interest, then we know that they value these enrichment devices. They are enriching for them. We do see a shift in terms of interaction when there is a new partner. Usually it either drops down, or when one of the partners that they like interacting with is out of the group, then the whole thing changes. So that's very similar to what we usually observe when we have a new social group. So everyone who works with the animal knows that if one individual leaves, one individual comes, that changes the social dynamic of the animals. And we believe that the cooperative play that we have seen with these devices do reflect very strongly, or indicate these kind of changes in the social dynamic. But what we have seen over the time, as these new individual integrate into the group, then the cooperative play became more frequent or longer. So I don't know if the socialization gets better and that's why there will be more cooperative play, or playing with the device actually helps for the socialization. But it's also possible that both happens at the same time.
Right. One thing that I'm really interested in, with, you know, a lot of different species when it comes to enrichment is the individuality between the specific individuals. Have you seen, what's the sort of like variation you've seen, like for do certain individuals have like different problem solving methods and like behaviors that they show compared to others, or what have you seen for that?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. So that's one of the, probably the funnest thing to observe, how different individuals start interacting. Or to give you an extreme example, we have a female dolphin who is around 40 years old. And she has a calf, and usually she is in the same group with her calf. I shouldn't call her a calf. She's a young adult, a sub-adult dolphin. But this particular dolphin has a personality of being very protective of her daughter. So for 3 years or so, she would just swim next to her daughter, and then basically just watch what she's doing when she's interacting with the device, and sometimes tell her, okay, that's enough now, leave it and let's go. And then the daughter would be diligent enough to drop the device or give it to another, and then just go swimming with her mom. And after 3 years, stretching 4 years, we had a session when this particular individual, talking about the mom, was one of the first ones to approach the device. And then she basically monopolized the device for nearly the whole session. She did let the others play a little bit, but then this tendency started continuing, and she became a dolphin who never touched the device before, a dolphin who would play with the device for 90% of the session. So when it was end of the session time and about to jump in to grab the device, she's happily swimming around the pool, dragging the device, and I have to wait until there is a time for me to be able to get the device out of the pool. So we have seen these kind of exciting changes in individual behavior. We also seen change, or I wouldn't say change, we also seen difference in the tendencies of who like to interact with whom, and how does it change when the social network changes. And we have also seen animals who have developed some very weird way of playing with the device. That's the only way we can describe it. We have one male dolphin who likes to put the device on the bottom, not cooperatively, by himself, and then push it around the pool bottom. We usually call it the toy car behavior. And then he emits all of his whistles during this time, kicking with his fin and just speeding along the pool, and all the others are following him. Then they all take turns excitedly playing with the device, and then finally they start cooperating again. But he is the only one who would express this kind of behavior, which is very strange but entertaining at the same time. So we know that dolphins have distinct personalities that have been tested, and we know that these personalities are stable over time. So when we looked at, when scientists in general looked at play behavior within dolphins, we know that there are differences within individual level and also sometimes in age level. But dolphins are one of those species where you can see play behavior from very early age until basically very old age. So we have animals that not necessarily play for every single time, but they all have their favorite enrichment. And the care team usually know this dolphin likes this enrichment the most. This dolphin likes this enrichment for the most. And in our facilities, especially those particular, some of those particular enrichment are used for as a very strong secondary reinforcer. So when there is, let's say, a medical procedure or a training where the animals have to participate voluntarily, they not only offer fish, but they get an extra long time to play with those enrichment devices that we know they love so much. So I think, as you mentioned, that's really important for anyone who about to design a new enrichment to know your animal, know what they like, know what they are interested in, how they like to play with their regular enrichment items, and how could you use that information to design something new.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, absolutely. It's always so interesting to me to hear and see the amount of individuality even in species that you might not immediately think sort of express themselves as individuals. There's always a certain level of individuality there, and it's really interesting to sort of see that, see enrichment like bring it out of them. It's, yeah, really interesting. How, one of the things that I find really challenging with cognitive enrichment is specifically like evaluating and creating reliable, you know, repeatable cognitive enrichment, much like your lab has done. Do you have any sort of advice for people looking to sort of how to evaluate and how to create cognitive enrichment that is enriching over time?
I would say, yes, we have to do all kind of consideration at the beginning, but I would say still stay in the middle ground. Don't be too careful. It's not the right term. But what I say that it doesn't work to just keep thinking. Sometimes you have to try something. It may not work. It's safe for the animal, but maybe they don't have interest. You keep going. Test it a couple of times because they might develop an interest. But even if they don't show an interest in it, you might be able to use that information to change that device in a different manner that it will allow you to generate something that catches the animal interest. So I would say that look what other people have done. Obviously, know your species, know what the species biologically, physically, and cognitively capable of. So cognition in terms of cooperation for dolphins, we know it's very important. And if I want to develop a, let's say, a cooperative device for panda bear, that would be a failure because you know that they live, you know, they're not going to cooperate. They live by themselves. So you have to design something, obviously, that you need to know this, what the species would like to engage or what they do in the wild to replicate a potential problem the animal faces in the daily basis or you know, repetitively in the wild, that would be something that we know that they have the cognitive capacity to solve those problems. So we can design something to try to simulate that. And I think that's the very first step. And when you come to designing something, again, you put it to the test, you try to think about all the things that might happen, and then the animal might start using it in a very different way that you expect. And then you will be like, oh, okay, I didn't think about that. But, you know, you will learn something from it and you will be able to modify the device. And maybe it doesn't work for one animal, but it might be something that the other animal really loves. So then you can keep it for that one particular animal. However, and this is, I think, something very important to mention, just because one animal does not show active interaction or active interest in that device, that doesn't mean that it's not enriching for them. Remember, enrichment can be categorized for visual purpose or auditory purpose or any kind of sensory interaction. Just watching another animal interacting with that device can be entertaining, even if the other animal is keep failing and throwing the device around. Social animals can also be interested in the failure of their partner. I mean failure by not something that's harmful for them, but something that, let's say, they don't happen to open the device or the device falls apart or whatnot. So you can also evaluate the interests of the individuals in the group by looking at their behavior in correlation with what the others do. So again, if it's, let's say, an older animal who is not so keen to play, but he's happy to look around and watch what the others are doing, then it might also be considered not necessarily cognitive enrichment, but it might be considered as an enrichment for them, right? So he is sleeping less and looking at the others, and that's also something important to consider. And then finally, how to keep the animals interested in a long period of time. That's another question I get very, very often. Actually, we do use our devices and we try to create a new model based on the previous device. And it's not just out of the curiosity what happens with that, because I'm trying to approach or tailor-make a device for answering a question. So for example, we know that cooperative play happens with our devices when the animals hold the device between them. And now I want to know, and that's what I'm doing. I hope no one in the audience will publish before me so I can share this. I am designing devices where the handle length can be modified by the animal. So basically holding the device between them, it's not the distance between the animals is not going to be defined by the size of the PVC, but the way they hold the handle. So with that, I am able to look at the preferred distance between the animals or the formation the animals create while they surfacing together. So bringing a little bit closer us to the understanding of how this synchronous behavior happens. How do they decide when we're going to go up for an air? Who decides in the group? And so going into more of the details on the mechanism, but because these are the questions driving me, I'm using these ideas when I'm designing a new device. But with that, I'm also creating devices with modifications, which are animals either play with or they don't play with. So, but again, don't give up. So if you made something, you put it in, an animal doesn't interact with it, yeah, maybe that's true. But that doesn't mean that they won't interact with it later on. Another thing I usually suggest. So for example, depending on the complexity of the device, you might need to have some exposure sessions beforehand. So this comes back to the design of Dr. Kutai, when the cooperative device wasn't thrown into the pool right away. Before we did that, basically the devices were hanged at the pool side, one handle attached to the pool ball, and the other was available for the dolphin. We still had fish and ice inside, and it was still in the water, but there was only one handle they could interact with. And we wanted to see if the dolphins understood that they had to manipulate the handle, not any other part of the device, in order to open it. So, because if you just throw it in the water and they don't interact with it, you don't know is it because they don't know how to pull on it or whether they don't know that they have to pull on the handle or the PVC pipe. So, with this first exploratory step, we confirmed each of the dolphins were able to open the device by pulling on the handle. And after that, we've thrown the device in the pool and then the dolphins start interacting with it right away. So, if you have a very complex cognitive enrichment, which requires manipulation, like very specific manipulation. One part of the device needs to be manipulated. I'm not saying you should train your animal. You can. That's another thing. You can train your animal to manipulate it, but that's a different question. Because right now I'm looking at a behavior, an innate behavior, and I do not want to influence the animal in any way. But from a trainer perspective, if you don't want to collect scientific data, you just want to collect, you know, just want to have an enrichment that animal is interacting with, you can even train your animals to cooperate. That shouldn't be difficult. We train our animals to do things together all the time.
Yeah.
So by asking them to pull on that and you reinforce it, then, you know, that's another way to go around. So these are all different approaches, and none is one better than the other. The, you know, the question is what you want to use these enrichments for. For regular enrichment items, we usually train our animals, habituate them to the presence of these regular enrichment items before we just throw them in the pool, unless they are already familiar with all kinds of enrichment items and they are familiar with the appearances of novel stuff in their pool, which happens in our facilities. So my animal never show anything intimidation or anything regarding the device. No matter what we throw, they come sharp against the device in a good sense.
Yeah.
So we do not have this kind of difficulty, but this is another question I have been asked from different facilities where they have much less options for providing enrichment for their animals. Then yes, you can always train the animals or habituate them to different parts of the device. So let's say if your device is attached from post pieces and balls and hooks, then you can take it apart first, do a habituation training for all of these pieces, and then tie them together and see if the animal can take it apart. So then you can make sure that there is no intimidation, there is no fear. Another thing you might be able to do, for example, in the first time for the male dolphins, and even until now, we always use two pools at the same time. So two interconnecting pools, we put the enrichment in one pool, and there's always another pool for someone who might not feeling social at that time and want to go and do his own dolphin right. thing. So there's always another option. So providing multiple options for the animals, that's always a good approach.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that's fantastic advice. When it comes to cooperative enrichment, is there another species that you'd really like to see more research done or more sort of cooperative enrichment? Do any come to mind?
Wow, this is a really good question. Actually, we keep big cats in many zoological facilities. And we know that they have very strong social bonds, but I have not seen, maybe I just haven't found any of in the literature, or I haven't looked well enough, but I haven't seen many of the cognitive enrichment or cooperative enrichment for these guys. So I think that would be another interesting area of study.
Yeah, no, absolutely. That's a really good point. I haven't seen that either. But if anybody, you know, has done that, then definitely let us know, because that would be really cool to see. So we sort of alluded to it earlier, but you know, do you have any sort of advice for bridging that gap between animal welfare research and the, you know, day-to-day husbandry, the keepers that are actually, you know, looking after these animals day in, day out? Do you have any sort of advice for, you know, bringing those programs together to really impact animal welfare?
Well, this is a really good question, and it's something that's so important, because if you think about zoological research, it's still rather new to science. It's usually the scientists coming in, doing something, collecting some data, and they are gone. So the fact that we are a team who is working in the park, or the part of the park, you know, that's not very usual. And I think all the collaborations within our institution that succeeded, that all come down to us working together with the CAD team directly, and understanding their challenges, their daily schedule, because, you know, everyone has lots of things to do. So if you are working in a research laboratory, the animals are there and you conduct research. But if you're working in a zoological environment, the animals have a lot of other things to do. They have training sessions, they have husbandry, they potentially have educational talks, they have any kind of presentation. And because of all these factors, you know, the social group and everything changes over the time. So working alongside with the veterinarian team and the care team, I think that's the most important part. So because if we can understand what they are facing with, challenge for the care team or challenge for the veterinary team, we can come up as a support rather than the other way around. And then if we can provide a tool for understanding the welfare impact of anything, let us say, veterinary treatment or behavioral issue for these animals, and provide a potential solution for that. And all of a sudden, you know, we are not someone who is coming in and doing something with the animals on the top of all the other things that's happening to the animal, rather than working as part of the team and working towards the same goal, which is to care for these animals for the period of their life. And you know, that also takes some time for us doing this over and over to develop a trust, not together with the animal but also with our human colleagues. And that's where hopefully relationships can change and we can work together in a way that's good for everyone.
Yeah, no, it's so important for you know, the success not only of these important studies, but also for the success of the animals. Because it's one thing if we're doing all this animal welfare research that is, you know, cutting edge, but if it doesn't make it to the actual animals, then, you know, what are we doing it for, right? So it's yeah, so important to think about, for sure.
Exactly. And I really like the idea of going and talking with the trainers and see what is it that they need. Mm-hmm. So, for example, we have a study where we provide a cognitive enrichment for our seals. We provide big ice floes and the seals can practice their whole lab behavior, which is something that seals usually do. And it also allows us to connect another very crucial point, which is education and conservation, because we provide a real-life scenario of climate change. As the ice melts away or eaten by the seal, then at one point, the seals won't be able to hold out, which is exactly what's happening in the wild and the animals facing this kind of issue. So that allows us to deliver a conservation message. But going back to why we started the study, I was told by one of the CAT team members that they wanted to have more enrichment for their animals, something that they didn't have, something that was different from everything that they had. So that's how our study started up, trying to create a big, big ice floe that everyone said was not possible. And we broke a lot of ice, and we cried a little, and we gritted it. And, you know, you keep going. It took us nearly 6 months to make sure that we were able to deliver such a huge piece of ice going out from the freezer all the way and not breaking it, not crushing it into the pool, and then have the animals interact with it. And then we put it in, and no one interacted for the first session. And we cried again. So... But you know, that was the first session. Then the second session, we start seeing animals interacting. Mm-hmm. This happened. We did make smaller ice pieces, and they were very happy with it. We knew that the trainers provided ice cubes and very small pieces. So we tried to make smaller pieces that the animals, it was much bigger than they had anything that they had before, but not big enough to actually hold out on it on a longer period of time. So that's what inspired us to make the big one on the first place and go through all that trouble. And then when the animal doesn't want to interact, then you are like, okay, so what's next? Mm-hmm. But that's when it comes in, that one session tells you nothing. You have to go back and do it again. And for example, for the seals, we have huge differences in personality. We have a couple of these MVPs who interact with the ice for every single time. We can't even put it in fast enough because they are waiting already, that we can give the ice to them. And then we have some of these individuals who just, you know, like cruising by, not showing much of the interest. But that doesn't stop us from creating the ice enrichment over and over. And the trainers have probably seen us struggling over now years. I wouldn't say struggling, but, you know, it's a hard work. The ice weighs like 160 kg and we have to move it around and lift it and push it, and they have seen us, you know, not giving up and keep going back every week. So they probably either given up on us disappearing, or they, you know, found a new respect for the resilience of the research team of coming back and making the ice. And then, you know, they sometimes stand next to us during the session and pointing out that what a funny behavior the animals are doing that they have not seen that before. So they seem to be happy to seeing their animals are happy and interacting over the time. So then it all comes back to, you know, guiding this relationship between the care team and the research team.
Yeah, it's fantastic. And there's some great videos of these big ice flows for the seals on the Ocean Park Facebook page that I'll link in the show notes for people to check out, because they are impressive blocks of ice that you guys have managed to get into that pool. So kudos for that, because it's definitely not an easy task. So it's really really cool to go through all that effort to you know, clearly impact the seals in that way. It's great. In sort of wrapping up here, if there is a poster that you could put up, you know, in every animal care facility all over the world that, you know, people are actually reading and understanding and looking at every day, what would this poster say and why?
This is a question I had to think so much about. Not because I didn't know the answer. I just thought there were so many things I wanted to say about this and it wouldn't fit on one poster. So narrowing it down, I feel like the most important thing is for anyone to understand, and it doesn't necessarily mean just animal welfare. When I'm thinking about welfare, I'm thinking about the welfare of any living thing. Mm. If you go down, and even in the level of plants, they have welfare. We provide the best welfare by putting them under proper light conditions, giving them water regularly, or keeping them from drying out, and so on. So when thinking of welfare, I think we have to think about the whole system that we are living in, because welfare will only work if everyone within the ecosystem is healthy and having a good welfare. But when it comes down to the welfare of the individual, we have to think about it's not only the physical welfare or the environmental that's provided, but it all comes down to the mental welfare as well. And these things, even for an individual level, are not constant. They change over the lifetime of the animals. So we also have to respect that, since if we are working in a zoological facility, we might have the chance of seeing this individual being born until end of life. And because this is a journey where the animal's needs, both physical and mental, will change over the time, we have to adapt to that. Their environmental might change over the time. So again, I said too much for a poster, but if I...
It can have a front and a back, it's fine.
If I had to summarize it, it's to look at the individual, think about all aspects, physical, mental, environmental, and look at the stage of life, the period of life, and what the animal occupies in the ecological niche of a zoo or the whole ecosystem. And that's how we can provide the best aspect to them.
Yeah, I love that. That's a great poster. So important to think about. Yeah, absolutely. So Esther, thank you so much for coming on. Your research is, fascinating. From individuality to cooperative enrichment, it's so interesting and something that, it's going to really have an impact on a lot of animals all over the world, I'm sure. So thank you for taking the time today to talk to us and to educate us on some of this fantastic research. Again, I will put everything in the show notes for people to check out. There's some great videos, diagrams, and the actual research papers themselves. They're very, very interesting. So I recommend everyone check those out. But Esther, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you so much for having me. Thank you.
Yeah, and to everybody listening, thanks for listening, and until next time, thank you. We hope you enjoyed that episode of the Wild Enrichment Podcast. If you want to follow us on social media, you can find us at Wild Enrichment on Instagram, Facebook, and Pinterest. If you want to learn more about Wild Enrichment and see some of our great resources, check out www.wildenrichment.com. Also, if you wish to support Wild Enrichment, check out our Patreon. Again, thank you so much for listening. Until next time. Wild Enrichment is independently owned and claims no affiliation to any zoo, aquarium, or other animal care institutions. All of the information and opinions communicated through this podcast, wildenrichment.com, and affiliated social media accounts are based on my own opinions and experiences and are not in any way reflective of the opinions of my employers, past or present. Thank you.